So we spent several weeks on resentment and the fourth step. And in the fourth step, we've made a decision in step three that I'm not going to play God anymore and I'm not going to run my life. And why? Because it didn't work. And I've made a decision that God's going to be my director and he's going to be my father and I'm the child. And I'm working for God now, and I want him to direct my thinking because my life was unmanageable and I had no power to keep from drinking. I had no power to manage my life. So I need to have an access to a power which I call God, and I made a decision to access the power. I don't get powerful in the 12 steps. What I do is have a relationship with the power. Now step four is we're gonna look at where I plugged the power into the Michael socket. And when I do that and I live a life run on self, there's certain manifestations of self that we call wrongs. The fourth step is very simple. We inventory three areas of our lives that are the manifestations of a life run on self-will. The first one is resentment or anger. The second is fear. And the third is the sex inventory or the conduct inventory. And why do we do that? Because it says that the decision on step three will have no permanent effect unless what? At once, followed by a personal house cleaning, which none of us have attempted, right? And it says we're going to look at the causes and condition of our situation. It says alcohol is just a symptom. Well, how can it be a symptom? What's it a symptom of? We drank because we were living a self-centered life and we were irritable, restless, and discontented, and we sought the ease and comfort of alcohol. And you can apply that for drugs as well. And it says, I want to face and be rid of with a strenuous effort the things in me that have been blocking me from the power. Now, we read in chapter to the agnostic that the power is inside of all of us, right? It says in the last analysis, that's where his God is found. He's deep down inside all of us. It says we've obscured it by what? Worship of other things, calamity, pomp. And now we want to have access to that power. So what's obscuring God's power in my mind is my thinking that came in here as the result of self-will. And like Joe and Charlie said, my mind was like a 7-Eleven. And you walk into the 7-Eleven and you see all this stuff on the shelves in the room. They say that's resentment. And all the stuff in the refrigerated areas, your fears and your shame and guilt is in the back room. Now how can God direct that mind? So we have to see several things. We have to see what's wrong with our thinking. We have to see the manifestations of that. We have to see the truth behind it. We have to be free of the power of those thoughts so God can direct us. So the fourth step is where we look at our whole life on self-will, and we look at the life, the manifestations of self. And it says on page 64 that we're going to search out the flaws in my makeup which caused my failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated me, we consider its common manifestations. And the manifestations of self that defeated me, the number one offender is resentment, because it's an offender against my relationship with God. And when I'm angry and I'm resentful, whatever I'm angry or bothered by is my higher power, and it's not God. And so it says, from it stems all forward of a spiritual disease, because I'm at dis-ease with my spirit, my relationship with God, and I've been mentally and physically ill, and I've been spiritually sick. And it says, when the spiritual malady is overcome, then I straighten out mentally and physically. In many ways, my thinking becomes God-centered. Physically, I'm not separated from the world. I'm not afraid of people anymore, remember? We lose our fear of people. And my relationships are better. Now, the spiritual malady is my separation from God and blocking access to the God socket. So the instructions for the fourth step on resentment are very simple. People are worried about the fourth step. They hear all sorts of things. We just look at the directions in the book. It says, in dealing with resentments, I put them on paper. So I get a notebook. I gave Justin and I started work together, and I bought this very expensive resentment toolkit. I got it ordered from Amazon. It was on sale. And I said, I need it right away. So they delivered it right away. And it's a notebook and a pen. But it was a special order. You see how silly it is? You don't need anything but a pen and a notebook. And it can be white paper, black paper, it can be white ink, black ink, it doesn't matter. It says you put them on paper. So you list all the people, institution, or principals with whom you're angry in your life. And it may take a while, some people can't think of any, but just think of anybody in your family. Think of any of people you worked with, anybody you went to school with. For a lot of us, it's endless, because we were bothered by so many people in our lives, because we were living on judgment. And to build self-esteem, we were judging other people, and we were getting angry at them. So you put it on paper. The second column is we asked ourselves why we were angry. And then the third column is what was threatened. See, there's fear behind any time I'm bothered or angry. I'm fear that my pocketbook's going to be threatened, my self-esteem is going to be threatened. Now, my self-esteem, I was really ill. I don't know about you guys, but like I would feel bad and I would put you down in my mind to feel better. And that's called the judger. And the judger was really good. I knew it was wrong with everybody. And I could see where they needed help. And all that did was make me sick. It's a bad way to build self-esteem. But when I've done inventories with a lot of people, that's what a lot of our resentments are. We look at other people and we try to... We feel threatened by them because of our self-esteem is so low. And our pocketbooks, what we want for money, what we want for emotional, material security, my ambitions, what I think I need to be successful. So if anybody threatens that, then I get angry at them. And my personal relationships, including sex, it says, are hurt or threatened on page 65. So whenever I'm hurt or threatened, which means really afraid, then I get angry. Now, for a lot of people, it could be somebody cutting in front of them in the road. Now, I don't get road rage. My wife says I cause it, but she gets road rage from me. But people get road rage. Well, what's that all about? It's your self-esteem. How dare them pull in front of me? I'm Michael the Magnificent. How could somebody pull in front of me? I'm in Walgreens. The lady had like 8 pages of coupons and a cart full of crap, and I just had one thing, and why should I have to wait for her? So I said, God, you know, what am I going to learn from this situation? So I said, well, thank God she has the coupon, she probably needs it, and I can wait, maybe they'll open another register. But you see, our resentments are endless, because we're seeing the world through self-centered glasses. Now, they call it a grudge list, and on page 65, we set opposite each name our injuries. Now, there are all sorts of resentments that we've accumulated in our lives. The ones we really want to face and be rid of are the bad ones, the ones where they're harming us because we think about them and they occupy our minds, a lot of our relationships, a lot of those resentments. But when you do this inventory, you see how angry you were your whole life and how you were wasting so much time being bothered by people who were just human beings like us. And it says, on the grudge list, was it my self-esteem, my security, my ambitions, my personal sex relationships? And then if you look at the examples here, you see fear and you see pride. And so you look at these examples. We went over this last week. You do the three columns. And it's not hard to do, to put the list of the people, institution, or principles that bothered you. It's not hard to look at the cause. Now, the cause you don't want to spend a lot of time on because it's really not important. Because what we're going to learn, it was always wrong to get angry. And the other thing that I've learned from doing inventory with so many people and my own is that I saw things wrong. And what I thought they actually did wasn't even true. It was distorted. The most common is parents. I sit down with somebody, they got mom or dad, and they list a whole page of everything mom and dad did wrong. And then you say to them, well, did they ever make you dinner? Did they go to work? Did they ever take you to the ball game? Did they ever do these things? And when you start looking at it, you can see how distorted it is. It's distorted because in some way it fulfills some self-esteem and it's not seeing it as true. And they can usually change their attitude towards mom and dad within 10 minutes. And then we're going to look at the prayers that we say and they're relieved of that. And they see their parents in a different way. It's very common. I had the same thing. So you look at the three columns, and it says you go back through your lives, nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. And then you're going to consider it carefully. So it shouldn't be hard to do the three columns. And then it said on page 66, it says the clue that to conclude that others was wrong was as far as we got. We could see how other people were wrong, and we were focusing on that. And the outcome was that they would continue to wrong us because we would focus on what they did and we would stay sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we'd be sore at ourselves for the way we had behaved. But it says, the more I fought and tried to have my own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. I can't win if I'm angry. And so we've read these paragraphs a lot through the years. We've read them here the last few weeks. We'll read them again. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. Well, why are you unhappy? Because when you're in resentment, you're separated from God. And it's futile because it's a complete waste of time. And then you, to the precise extent that we permit this. Now remember, we permit the anger. I really like this book. It's not AA approved. It says You Can't Make Me Angry by Dr. Paul, who wrote the Alcoholic Addict Acceptance chapter. And he wrote this when he was 80 years old, and he had opened a treatment center in Palm Springs. And it's excellent. It's how anger is a choice. And he talks about the way we see things in the world. It's very powerful, and I've enjoyed reading it. It says, I permit this. See, anger is a choice. I allow myself to get angry and upset, and I squander the hours that are worthwhile. How much time have we spent being angry? And I always think, I'm sitting in my basement angry at somebody who's, and they're watching Big Bang and they're happy. And I'm sitting in my chair and I'm angry at them. It's a complete waste of time. Now, that was before I learned how to do the steps. I learned to take these exercises that we're going to talk about right now and change the way I see that. It says, if the alcoholic, my hope is to maintain and grow of a spiritual experience. Well, what do they mean? What do I need? Why do I need a spiritual experience? Because I need to be accessed to the God socket and experience God's power if my life is to have any meaning, if it's to be a successful at all in my relationships and have any peace and serenity. And I want to maintain and grow that. The business of resentment is infinitely grave. Now, I don't think you have to be a physician to know that infinitely grave is bad. But they're not sure that you'll really get the point. So the next line says it's fatal. So it has the power to kill you. What it does is it separates you from God. And when you're separated from God, you have no access to the power. And an alcoholic separated from God is not in a good place. And it says, when harboring such feelings, remember, we put these resentments in safe harbor. When they have a hurricane warning, they take the boats and they put them in a safe harbor so they're protected. Well, we did the same thing with our resentments. We didn't want anything to get between us and our resentments. We put them in the safe place. See how silly it is? We made them, we gave them power, and when we do that, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the Spirit, which is God. And then the insanity of alcohol returns. Why? Because I have no power to see the truth about alcohol if I don't have a relationship with God, and then I drink, and to drink is to die. But you can go a long time before you drink living with resentment and be completely miserable. And so what we're looking for in sobriety is emotional sobriety, not physical sobriety. And we want to have emotional sobriety. We can't have emotional sobriety if we're living on resentment. So it says, if I'm to live, anybody here want to live? It says I have to be free of anger. Now, we had that one meeting a few years ago where the guy said he never gets angry and banged on the table and walked out. Or we argued, and this was I hope there are no lawyers in the room. He was a lawyer, and he was arguing how long you're angry before it's a resentment. And that's how silly it is. But you have to be free of anger. It doesn't say you can't get angry, but you don't want it to have power over you, so you want to be free of it. So you want to detach yourself from the emotion. You may get emotionally angry for an instant or a second or a minute, but you don't have to hold on to it. You want to be free of it. It says, the grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. Now, you've heard that resentment is like taking poison, hoping you'll die. I mean, it's true. It's so ridiculous. Now, in the in step 10 in the 12 of 12, he talks a little bit about this. It says, it's a spiritual axiom that every time I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with me. It's not them, it's me that I'm disturbed. If somebody hurts us and we are sore, we are in the wrong also. Remember, resentment is wrong judgment. You're making a wrong judgment. And it says, are there no exceptions? What about justifiable anger? If somebody cheats us, aren't we entitled to be mad? That's why I said the second column is really not that important. Because, of course, they may have done things that were wrong. We're not saying we excuse what people did, but we want to be able to forgive them. But we don't want to be sore. Because it says, are there no exceptions to the rule? What about justifiable anger? If somebody cheats us, aren't we entitled to be mad? Can't we be properly angry with self-righteous folks? For us of AA, these are dangerous exceptions. We have found that justified anger ought to be left to those better qualified to handle it. My justified anger will keep me sick. And when we learn that anger is always wrong, it's an emotion that's always wrong. And so we're going to learn how, it says few people have been more victimized by resentments than we alcoholics. It mattered little whether our resentments were justified or not. A burst of temper could spoil a day. A well-nursed grudge can make us miserably ineffective. Nor were we ever skillful in separating justified from unjustified anger. As we saw it, my wrath was always justified. Anybody relate to that? Anger, that occasional luxury of more balanced people, can keep us on an emotional jag indefinitely. These dry benders often lead straight to the body, to the bottle. And so, anybody think that anger and resentment is bad? Anybody agree that it's poison? Anybody agree that it's something that's not, it's not something that we want to do and hold on to anymore, right? So look at the next paragraph. It says we're going to turn back to the list, for it held the key to our future. Now look at that word. The word's there, key to our future. I'm an alcoholic. My life's unmanageable. I've been living a self-centered life. The key to my future is this list, just three columns. We're prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. See, we're going to look at our wrong judgment from an entirely different angle, which we've never done before. I'd never done it before until I worked this step. We begin to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to kill. A lot of times it's not even real. Some of my resentments are what I thought people thought of me, or what they were thinking. It sounds ridiculous when you say it, but I'm sure somebody else has had that too. You know what they're thinking. You know how they're making judgments on you, so you get angry at them. Fancied or real, and then a lot of times the things that we thought that they did were actually distorted in our minds. And it has the power to actually kill. How can we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? How do we master resentments? Well, I don't know how to master my resentments. If I did, I wouldn't have had them. We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. Remember it says in the book, selfish is self-centered, it's the root of my problem. We must be rid of it. It's going to kill me. And it said God makes that possible. See, I couldn't master my resentments. I'm going to need God to help me master them. So it says this was our course. And these next two paragraphs have changed my life. I use this all the time, and I know others in the room do. And when I do it, my life becomes better on the spot instantly. So I'm going to realize that people who wronged me were perhaps spiritually sick. To me, they're just human beings. They could be self-centered also. They have their script for the world, and they're running their show, and I'm running my show, and we're in conflict. And so they were perhaps spiritually sick. To me, they're just human beings. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. See, I was sick too, and I was on other people's resentments list. I may be tonight, I don't know. And it says, they disturbed us. And then this reminds me of the golden of the Bible. It says, love your neighbor as yourself. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So love my neighbors as myself. I don't love myself first. I show love to them, that they're human beings, and then I'll feel the love in myself from God. And I'm going to talk about that. I was reading something in 1 Corinthians where it says love is the greatest thing, and they talk about that. And this is where we're going to actually change from being angry to showing people love. And when we do that, then we change the way we see them, and the resentments don't have power over us anymore. So it says, I'm going to ask God. Asking God in the big book is a prayer. It's a petition. They took it from the book of James. Ask, when you're asking based upon faith and belief, it'll come true. We expect it to come true, and it always does. So I ask God whenever anybody bothers me, I say, God, help me show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. Help me show them. So it's not about me praying for them. It's about me praying for me to change the way I see them. Now, if I'm showing tolerance, pity, and patience for you, that's a form of prayer too. That's praying that you have all the things that I have. But if I don't show them tolerance, pity, patience, then I'm going to be stay bothered by them and separated from them. And it says, when a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. I try to say they're just human beings. They're just people. We're all God's kids. How can I be helpful to him? How can you be helpful to someone that you used to be angry? It's a change in your attitude. Remember, Dr. Jung said the solution is a rearrangement of the way we think and we act. We want a personality change. I'm changing my personality now with God's help from being angry to being loving and tolerant and patient and helpful. And you can do that in 10 seconds. So I use this prayer all the time. Something starts to bother me. Well, there you go again. I'm back plugged into the Michael socket. I don't like the way I see it. And I have to say, well, God, help me show him tolerance, pity, and patience. And I just say this this prayer, God, save me from being angry at whatever it is. And when I say that, it changes me right away. I can't explain it. You try it, something happens. And how can I be helpful to them? Thy will be done. To me, this is one of the greatest things I've learned in the program is how to do this prayer and change the way I see something, because I'm seeing it wrong. I'm bothered. I'm disturbed, and I'm resentful or angry, and I can stop right away and ask God to change me. And the way I know that I'm having a spiritual experience is I could see that I'm wrong when I get angry. See, before I came in here, I was always right. They were always wrong. But now, when I'm watching with God, I can see that I'm separated. I'm getting separated, and I come back to God and say, God, save me from being angry. Now, this is the 10th step. The 10th step says we're in the fellowship of the Spirit, page 84, right? It says when we're in the fellowship, in the world of the Spirit, I'm with God. And it says we watch for selfishness, society, resentment, and fear. Well, I always thought we wait for that. But then as I studied it, I watch with God when it starts to come up. So if I have a relationship with God and I've worked steps 1 through 9, I'm living in step 10, I will start to see my anger right away and I can stop. I don't have to get off the deep end, get disturbed. I used to have a God pole in the office and hold the God pole when things went bad. After a while, I would just hold the pole and the nurses would say, well, what's bothering you? I said, well, nothing. I've just hold the pole. And they said, okay, because I used to tell them that's the God pole. And then I'd see them holding it. You know, when you work at an office like I am, and Annie can relate, crap happens all day long. It's endless. And so sometimes you just hold the God pole. When you do, you settle down, you get undisturbed. So this prayer has really changed my life. And it says we avoid retaliation or argument. We don't want to win. We just want to be free of the anger. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If I do, I destroy my chance of being helpful. Now, there's a theme in the big book of being of love and service. It says on page 77, we're trying to put our lives in order. But this is not an end in itself. It says the real purpose of all this stuff is to fit myself maximally to be of service to God and others. So how can I be of service to someone and helpful when I'm angry at them? And it says I cannot be helpful to all people, and that's certainly true. Some people don't want our help. But at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. If I take a kind and tolerant view of each and every one, I'm practicing love, which is God. And it says, love and tolerance is our code of living on page 84, remember? In the 10th step. This is how we want to live. And this is how we do it. So, I think if you haven't done this, do your three columns and then write it out and then go over these prayers and go over it with someone and see if it doesn't change your life. And if you get angry tomorrow or bothered, turn to these pages and say these prayers. They're three or four prayers. It's very straightforward. Now, once you said the prayer for everybody on your list, you're not angry at them anymore. And this is the process of forgiving. You have a kind and tolerant view. Now, somebody said, well, what about Hitler? Well, we're not talking about excusing bad people's behavior. Let's say you've been abused. Let's say you've had horrible things done. We're not saying that their behavior was right. We're saying that we forgive the behavior. There's a big difference. It doesn't say that you excuse what people have done, because some people have done horrible things, but you can be free of the resentment by forgiving. And we say it at the end of every meeting in the Lord's Prayer. And so this is the process of forgiveness. And when you forgive somebody, you feel better. It happens automatically. And you're practicing love. And remember, I heard that speaker, and he says, the only thing lacking in any situation is the love I don't bring into it. I heard that, I said, wow, because it's true. If I bring love in every situation, my life will be good. Now we look at the list again, and this is where they talk about the fourth column, where we learn how we have caused the resentment. So it says, referring to our list again, putting out of my minds the wrongs of others have done. See, I have to put out what they did. It's not important the wrongs the others have done. I'm going to resolutely look for my own mistakes. So I'm going to look at my mistakes for each resentment. What did I actually do? What was the mistake? Now, it doesn't say part. You hear that all the time. What was my part? It doesn't say that. Because to me, when you say part, you mean that they had something to do with it. And they don't. This is my mistake in thinking, and I'm blaming them. And it's all about me, what I did wrong. And it says, remember, we made decisions based on self that caused us to be hurt and hurt other people. It says, our problems are of our own making. My resentments were all of my own making. Where had I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, or frightened? So you ask yourself four questions. Where have you been selfish? And where have you been trying to get your own way, to get your own needs? And selfish, I looked it up, it means a obsession with yourself and what you want. And remember, we're addicted to me. My disease is of self-centeredness, and I'm addicted to myself and what I want. Dishonest in so many ways. One of the ways I was really dishonest is I was playing God and judging people all the time. And it was dishonest in me to play God. In relationships, I wouldn't be honest with the other person, because of fear of what the consequences may be, and I stayed in bad relationships for a long time. I couldn't see that till I did this. And self-seeking, where was I taking actions to seek things for me? And fear, where was I frightened? And fear is underlying all of my resentments in some way. I'm afraid of not getting approval, afraid of not getting what I want. They're going to take something away. And so that's all you do. You look at that, and if you look at it and write it down and discuss it with somebody, you'll see the truth about your self-centered personality. And you'll see your story of your life run on self-will, and it's not pretty. And then these are the things that I'm going to take to God in steps 6 and 7 and ask him to be rid of these things so that I don't have to take the same actions. Remember, all my actions are based on thought, and if my thought's based on self, then it triggers these character defects, and then I take wrong actions. Though a situation not entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person entirely. See, we don't want to focus on them. Where were we to blame? The inventory is mine, not the other man's. And then we saw our faults, we listed them, we placed them before us in black and white, and then I have people list, and we have our cards. Here's the cards that we have, which is the life run on self-will and the life run on God's will. And we want to go from the left-hand side to the right-hand side, and the personal characteristics of self-will are our character defects. And so whenever I feel restless, irritable, guilty, shame, or discontent, one of these characteristics are coming into play. So then I say, God, I don't want to feel this way. I don't want to act on these characteristics. Change me. Help me practice a different way. And we'll go over all that when we do the 6 and 7 stuff. But this is where we're getting the information to tell us on how we want to change. And it says, we admitted our wrongs honestly. We're willing to set the matter straight. And that's the resentment inventory. And I can't say, if you don't do it once in the 4-step, you don't have to do it perfectly. But you're learning tools so you can do it all day long, every day. So whenever you get bothered, you start judging, you get impatient and tolerant, you get back in self, you can say, gee, wrong again, stop, ask God to change the way you see it, say the prayer, and go on with your day. And this is how you get free of the bondage of self. And then we were thinking about when we say the 3-step prayer, it says, that line, it says, take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help with thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. Whenever I'm bothered, whenever I'm disturbed, and I can go to God and say, change the way I see it, and say the prayers, and it's changed, it's God's taken away my difficulties. And that's an example of his power, his love, and his way of life. And so if you practice this as a way of living, your life will be better. It's guaranteed, 100%. So I think we'll open it up now and see if people want to comment on any of that. First, let me turn this off so I won't violate any of the AA rules.